So if I say to you, blank is the king of fakes, who am I referring to?
Oh, it's absolutely John Buxton, no one else.
What we do have is we have a fake.
This is a reproduction.
That's artificial.
It's actually a fake.
Very, very clever fake.
Mm-hmm.
John Buxton is an appraiser for WGBH's Antiques Roadshow, and he's earned himself a bit of a reputation.
You're getting nervous, aren't you?
I am. The last one I watched was you telling somebody they had a fake watch.
And tell me about how he got his reputation.
Because all he does is appraise fakes.
As usual, my boss and podcast sidekick, Roadshow executive producer, Marsha Bemko.
Okay, that's a little overstatement of fact.
But yeah, pretty much.
This was made to deceive you.
Made to deceive.
This is really made to fool you.
John is an expert in what's called tribal arts, meaning he'll appraise anything from a Congolese flywhip to a Peruvian clay pot.
That material obviously is kind of easy to try and fake because we see so much of it faked.
Now we're going to find out whether this thing is right or not.
And it comes right to John's table.
There's a couple of things that we want to see.
He's been in the business for decades.
The hair is actually a fiber material.
And he knows pretty quick.
That really doesn't make sense.
It's no good.
And it's a problem.
Do you think he likes being the king of fakes?
I think he kind of does. I think he kind of digs it.
Absolutely.
And that would be the king himself.
Absolutely. I wear it with great enthusiasm.
It's kind of like a superpower. Do you get tingles all over your body when a fake object is placed in front of you at the appraisal table?
I've just learned to duck.
Well, in this episode, we've got the story of an object that was not so easy to duck.
It was a puzzle for John.
This is really wild.
I'm Adam Monahan, a producer with WGBH's Antiques Roadshow, and this is Detours. Today, the king of fakes gets faked. The Atlas Obscura podcast is your definitive guide to the world's hidden wonders. A village in India where everyone's name is a song. A boiling river in the Peruvian Amazon. A spacecraft cemetery in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Every day, the Atlas Obscura podcast transports you to a real place in the world that will surprise and amaze you. Like and subscribe to the Atlas Obscura podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Funding for Detours comes from American Cruise Lines, proud sponsor of Antiques Roadshow. On a journey with American Cruise Lines, travelers experience the maritime heritage and culture of the Maine coast and New England islands. Their fleet of small cruise ships explore American landscapes, seaside villages, and historic harbors, where you can experience local customs and cuisine. To learn more, visit AmericanCruiseLines.com. Ancestry can help you discover your origins, build a family tree, and search historical records, giving you more ways to learn about your family's past and connect over their stories. Visit Ancestry.com to learn more. The story begins at our show in Anaheim, California in 2013. For reasons that will soon become clear, this appraisal has never been aired.
Robert, this is an exciting object. Tell me how you happened to acquire it.
Well, back in 1959, I had a brother.
A man named Robert comes to us with a piece of jade, as in the green gemstone, and it's carved in the style of the ancient Mayans.
That denotes royalty.
John remembers it vividly.
Because clearly, if this object was real, it was a very, very important object.
And Robert had come to it by chance, on a trip to Mexico, to meet his soon-to-be sister-in-law's family.
Her family collected pre-Columbian.
Pre-Columbian, as in artifacts from before the time Columbus arrived in the Americas.
We came upon this object, and they mentioned that it was really a fake. It was too good to be true.
But Robert decides to trade them his camera for it anyway.
For the piece of jade.
Oh, fantastic. And that was in 1959.
1959.
So a camera for a seemingly fake jade artifact. The story seemed pretty cut and dry, and John agreed.
When I first saw this jade, there was absolutely no doubt in my mind that this thing was a fake.
But Robert goes on.
Then I read an article in the Archaeology magazine of Jane Walsh at the Smithsonian Institute.
An anthropologist named Jane Walsh was experimenting with new techniques that could be used to help authenticate Mayan jade artifacts.
I wrote her a letter. She expressed interest in it, so I immediately mailed it to her.
She ran her tests and sent Robert the results.
When he opened up his portfolio and he showed me the documentation, I had a really fascinating dilemma.
Now, this is the first time in my career on the Antiques Roadshow that I looked at an object and I thought, okay, that's a fake.
True.
And then you handed me the book that was all of the research that Jane Walsh did, and it blew my mind.
What you've got to know here is that in Buxton's world, Jane Walsh is a big deal.
What she did was extraordinary.
She's best known for debunking the so-called crystal skulls, famous ancient artifacts, which for decades were thought to be made by the Aztecs, but as she helped prove, were actually made by some clever European forgers.
I've got a bad feeling about this.
Now me? I've only heard of these skulls because they show up in the title of an Indiana Jones movie.
Indy?
But for John, those fake skulls and Dr. Jane Walsh's discoveries are the stuff of legend.
And he had documentation that basically Jane Walsh felt this thing was authentic.
Hence the dilemma.
And what I chose to do after looking at the documentation and looking at the jade, I said,
if Jane Walsh says that this is a donkey walking across the street, then that's what it is.
You know, I'm not going to be a moron. I'm going to go on camera and I'm going to agree with Jane Walsh. And that's what I did.
At a good auction or a gallery, this piece is $100,000 to $150,000.
John Buxton, the king of fakes, says it's the real deal.
Now, well, are you speechless or can you say anything?
You've made my day.
And the appraisal wraps.
Okay, great. Good. Well, good, clean, well, thank in and you. Out. That's the way I like them.
I remember leaving Anaheim and I was in the airport and it just bugged me. I just kept on thinking. I said, John, you really believe that thing was wrong? So I decided, even though I'd never had any contact with Jane Walsh at all, I was going to find her. And it took me a while, but I talked to her. She remembered the piece, and what she said to me was a showstopper.
And what was that?
She said, oh, you didn't get the rest of the documentation.
Okay, so before we get into what Jane Walsh did and did not find on this jade, I want to give you a better idea of what she was looking for.
My name is Marcello Canuto. I'm a professor at Tulane University.
And so we found an expert of our own.
I'm an archaeologist.
Specializing in Mayan civilization.
I've been working in the Maya area since I was about 15, so about 35 years.
And Marcello, if you could pretend that you were talking to somebody who got all C's in history, just pretend. Uh-huh. And could you give us just a primer course of who the Mayan civilization was?
Okay.
Our adventure into the past this time will take us to the land of the ancient Maya, who, 1,000 years ago, ruled in splendor over what is now southern Mexico and Guatemala.
The Maya civilization is a civilization that developed for roughly 2,000 years, from basically 1,000 BC till the arrival of the Spaniards.
Which, for those of you who also got C's in history, was around the year 1500.
The jungle crept over the dead cities.
And while that doesn't mean that the Maya disappeared, there was a major culture change.
Uxmal and Copan.
Up until that point, the Mayans had built a complex network of cities.
Were as splendid in their architecture as Babylon or Nineveh.
Complete with temples, courts, and monuments.
Temples and palaces surrounding immense plazas.
They created a sophisticated calendar and writing system.
Many of the buildings contained superb stone carvings.
And most important for our purposes, they made art. A lot of it.
One of the things that we notice as archaeologists is that the Maya were very, very prolific in the creation of figural art. If you have a second, I can show you something that's actually here in the background.
We're speaking by video over the internet. So Marcello grabs a contemporary piece off his shelf.
Let me put this one up to the screen.
It's a candle, actually, that has been crafted to look like an ancient Mayan vessel.
One of the things that probably has attracted European interest or Western interest in the Maya world is the fact that their art is based a lot on the human figure.
It's art about people.
There are things about it that we can recognize. We can see people. We can see them standing. We can see hands, feet, people talking, people moving, people hunting, whatever.
Now, are we to take it that those are rulers or they're important people from the society?
More often than not, that's what you get.
And this is the case for the jade that Robert brought into our show. It's about 6 inches long, small enough to be actually worn on the wrist or around the neck, and it shows a royal figure sitting cross-legged. He has an elaborate feather headdress and some kind of ceremonial tray across his lap. According to Marcello, this type of image is typical of the classic Mayan period.
A particular time period that starts around 200 BC and goes to about 800 AD. It's about 1,000 years.
This is when the Mayan civilization was really at its peak, around the same time as ancient Rome.
Now, jade, make a point here, jade is probably the hardest material that the Maya worked.
As in, literally very hard. Fun fact, on the Mohs scale of mineral hardness, jade rates about the same as granite.
And the only thing that can sculpt something is something that's harder on this scale, right? So the way to work it was to use just slightly harder jade.
So they were carving one stone with another.
You have to also remember they did everything by hand.
And this type of process leaves very distinct tool marks, which will matter in a minute, as will this detail.
Moreover, jade is largely located in one area in the southeastern part of the Maya region, in an area that's near the border between Guatemala and Honduras. So it was mined from that area and then transported.
Which is why jade artifacts are found throughout the whole Maya region.
So it was an incredibly important material for the Maya throughout their entire history.
Now, perhaps you're wondering why I don't just simply show the jade to Marcello and ask him if he thinks it's real.
I get asked to authenticate objects quite often.
But he won't. The problem is that many Mayan artifacts have actually been looted from archaeological sites, then traded illegally. And so most scholars won't comment on an object that's in a private collection, like Robert's, even if obtained legally, because they don't want to add to these objects' financial value on the open market.
It gives value to these objects and promotes looting.
We could spend a whole episode talking about the ethics of buying and selling pre-Columbian artifacts. For now, just know that our team is sensitive to this issue as well. But in this case, since the jade we're talking about has been in the country for so long, it's perfectly legal to buy and sell. So in terms of making a TV show, we're good to go. And based on what Marcello has told us, we can now ask a few basic questions about our jade. The first is about the material itself. Does it come from this specific area in Guatemala where the Mayans got their jade? The second is about the carving. Was it done with the tools and techniques we know the Mayans used? And the third is about the image. Does it actually match the style of Mayan art from this classical period? Well, I had really hoped to put these questions to Jane Walsh herself, but unfortunately she declined our request for an interview. What we do have, though, are copies of the letters and emails she exchanged with Robert, the owner of the jade. And in those, we can find some clues.
Do you want me to do like a Katharine Hepburn? Does she have a British accent?
My friend and the show's line producer, Jill Giles, will read the part of Jane.
Yes.
When I thought of academic, I was like, Jill, let's go with Jill. All right.
April 8th, 2005.
This is when their correspondence begins.
Thank you very much for sending me your Maya jade carving.
For starters, Jane believes that the jade itself does originate from this specific valley in Guatemala.
Particularly in that it contains terramite amphiboles, which is common to jade from that area.
So to our first question, that's a solid yes. It's from the right place. This brings us to the second question, about the carving.
I had time to examine it and take silicone molds of much of the carved surface.
This is the key to her process, taking silicone molds, which give a negative impression of the carving, and allow her to see microscopic marks left by the carver's tools.
I am still awaiting the repair of our scanning electron microscope, but I have enough impressions with which I can examine the carving very closely.
Then, without much explanation, she adds,
although you have no information as to the actual provenance of the object, I am reasonably certain that it is an authentic carving and beautifully executed.
This is the letter that Robert showed to John Buxton. It's printed on official Smithsonian letterhead and hand-signed by Jane. Taken on its own, quite compelling.
Hello. I've just received your return shipment of my Maya Jade pendant.
4 days later, Robert, here performed by our series editor Jeff Cronenberg, responds by email.
I am so pleased with your preliminary findings and feel vindicated after so many years of not knowing for certain of its authenticity.
Hi, Bob. I'm so glad that the jade pendant arrived safely.
And she writes back the same day.
I had a hard time letting go. It really is very beautiful.
4 months pass. It's now August.
Hi, Bob. Sorry I haven't been in touch.
Jane sends Bob a few images she has taken with the electron microscope. So far, they confirm her initial opinion that this jade was carved by hand with all stone tools.
I hope this will give you some idea of what I've been up to and what things look like to me.
Again, several months pass.
Dear Bob, a belated Christmas and Happy New Year. I'm sorry that I haven't been in touch.
Now we're into the emails that Buxton did not see.
One thing we did notice on the silicone impressions I took of your carving was a very fine crackling.
And this is where the trouble starts. There is some kind of residue on the jade that's making it difficult to examine the tool marks.
Have you ever used anything to clean or polish your piece?
Funny you should ask.
Robert responds,
during my first year of marriage, my wife did mistakenly clean and polish several items.
Jane also reaches out to a colleague at the Smithsonian about this, who writes,
the plaque was examined under a long-wave UV light and was found to fluoresce a yellow-orange color in the crevices of the carving.
Meaning it is
tongue oil or linseed oil.
Like what you polish furniture with.
When we say tongue oil again?
That is Jill playing the part of sexy Janet.
Hello, Jane.
Now a full year passes.
I've been trying very hard to stay positive these last many months.
During this time, Robert sends the jade back to Jane so she can try removing the oil and taking some more impressions. And then comes this email from July of 2007.
Dear Bob,
this is the key email that Buxton never saw.
I've tried to clean it as best I can to remove the wax-like material that is in the carved areas, but have never been entirely successful in this endeavor.
So after all that, the answer to question two about the carving is,
I cannot report to you with any certitude about your Maya jade, other than to say what we've always known, that it is jade.
But it gets worse.
I also showed it to a specialist in Maya iconography.
There are concerns with the imagery as well.
The figure's headdress and the fact that he seemed to be holding a large tray of food are very untypical of this period of Maya carving.
Leading Jane to conclude,
I know it has taken me a very long time to get where we are at this moment, which is in fact a place I've been for quite a while, that I am uncertain about the piece also.
At this point, the two have been corresponding for over 2 years. They've made small talk about the weather, vented frustrations with their professional lives, and shared moments of personal loss, including the death of Robert's wife. Knowing all that, I think this is just Jane's way of letting Robert down as gently as possible.
I hope you are well and send my very best regards, Jane.
And so that just completely changed everything.
Again, our appraiser, John Buxton.
And, you know, obviously, since our show was in 2013, this was in 2007, our guest knew about it but didn't share that with me.
So you had the initial correspondence that the guest had had with Jane, but not the rest of the story.
That's correct. And so when I read that, you know, I think there's people all the time, especially now that Roadshow's been on the air for 25 years, that come in and basically don't give us all the information, or they lie to us, or maybe they forgot something. But we have to be a lot sharper now in season 25 than we were in season 1.
So at this point, I'm thinking our guest Robert falls into that last category. Maybe he just didn't realize those extra pages were significant, or maybe he thought it was too much to bring for a TV appraisal. In any case, it could all just be an honest mistake, right? But before I go ahead and get Robert on the phone, I figure I might as well see if I can get one more opinion. John recommends a guy he knows out in California.
My name is Donald Hale.
Donald has co-written a book about the imagery found on Mayan ceramics.
It's called The Maya Book of the Dead.
But he doesn't work at a university. He's more in the Buxton world, working with museums and private collectors, which is why he's willing to look specifically at this jade.
Let me pull it up on my screen here.
What do you think of our jade pendant?
I think John was right on his initial gut reaction. He didn't like it, and I agree.
Donald shows me how the lines in the carving are too straight.
It's an extremely straight line, like a ruler.
And that the item in the figure's hand doesn't resemble anything found in other Mayan art of this period.
Iconographically, it looks like gobbledygook. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
So far, Donald is just confirming what we've heard already. But then he says something I'm not expecting.
Well, the first thing when I saw it, I said, oh, I've seen that before.
He's seen our jade before, like this exact one.
Over 40 years ago.
Which in itself is odd, but even more odd is where Donald says he saw it.
In the hands of an art dealer in Hollywood.
Now, in the original appraisal, Robert never mentioned that he'd shown the jade to other experts or that he was involved with any art dealers. So right away, this is kind of a red flag. But all Donald can tell us for sure is that he's seen the jade. He's not sure who owned it at the time. He saw it in the hands of another dealer, so he doesn't even know if he's met the real owner. It's all a bit murky. So Donald goes to double-check his records, and we agree to talk later on.
I will email you the names of the two other people that I think may be involved.
Okay, bye. Now, before we hear back from Donald, I just want to explain why I'm making a big deal about what our guests may or may not have been up to in the 1970s. The reason is that our show doesn't want guests who are involved, at least on a professional level, in the buying and selling of the objects they bring in. No dealers allowed.
A dealer worth his weight knows what he's got.
Here's Marcia to explain why.
And if he doesn't, he shouldn't be a dealer. So it's we're like about, you know, discovering America's hidden treasures, not putting a dealer on to show his not-so-hidden treasure for him to advertise it.
Believe it or not, art dealers do show up at our events hoping to get on TV, which is why I was a bit dismayed when Donald sends me an image from his address book. The record from your address book matches the person who came on our show. So is that the guy who had the jade you remember?
Yes.
Okay.
And the thing is the person you're speaking to who brought the thing into Antique Roadshow was an art dealer in and of his own right and was buying and selling the material. And he was doing it and had for many years.
So if Donald is right about this, then there's a good chance our guest Robert is not simply an amateur collector who forgot to show us all his documents.
He was not naive.
This guy's an art dealer.
Yeah, he was a dealer, and that's how I met him.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. No, so oh, my gosh. If you had asked me to list 100 things of what you were going to say right then and there, that wouldn't have come up.
So he's no dummy. He was a dealer, at least, in the 70s.
Oh, he's no dummy. It's just, it's kind of a tangled web.
Like, does Robert actually believe this jade is real? But how could he, given everything we know about his background? And if he doesn't think it's real, why is he taking it on national TV with only the good documentation from Mayan scholar, legend, superstar Jane Walsh saying it is real? Nothing about this makes any sense.
You just knocked me out of the seat, Adam.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I'm calling him tomorrow. Tomorrow's my interview with him.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions for me to ask him?
Just however you say it, but you got to say it a little nicer. What were you thinking?
What was Robert thinking? Coming right up. Hey, Bob, it's Adam Monahan from Antiques Roadshow. How are you?
Hi. Very well, thank you.
This is the one conversation I have been dreading since we first started looking into our jade. I mean, who wants to confront a 90-year-old man about potentially withholding information in order to pass off a fake artifact as real and worth well over $100,000? I do not want to have this call.
Anyway, I'm ready. I
mean, great. Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since you were on our show. So let's start from the beginning before we get into the media stuff. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and about your life?
Well, I was born and raised in the Los Angeles area.
But right off the bat, Robert starts giving a pretty different picture of himself than what I had going on in my mind.
My parents originally came from Mexico, from the state of Zacatecas.
He's from a middle-class family.
Matter of fact, I come from a family of 7 brothers and 6 sisters.
And it was one of those 7 brothers that brought Robert to Mexico for the first time, like he told us in that original appraisal.
As custom demanded, our family had to meet the family of his fiancée.
Who then show him this jade.
The minute I saw it, I fell in love. I mean, this was fascinating. I knew nothing about pre-Columbian. I had never been to Mexico before, but this is just part of me now. And I think about it and I act on it, you know, literally every day.
This is the moment in our conversation when my ears really perk up, because in my head I'm trying to reconcile these two images of Robert the amateur collector who just stumbled on this piece by chance, and Robert the experienced dealer who knew all these people in the pre-Columbian scene. But maybe those two stories could both be true, at least in the case of this piece. To what I'm hearing is that it was this piece that set you off on your love of this material, this visit.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. According to Robert, it's after that trip to Mexico that he first gets into the world of collecting.
I would go to Mexico and travel around to the archaeological sites.
Even though he already had a college degree, he went back to school.
I went to UCLA night school.
Learned about this whole world of art dealers.
And then I started finding out where these dealers were.
But to Bob, these professional dealers were in a whole other league.
These are the big boys that handle the really beautiful stuff.
They lived in fancy houses out in Beverly Hills.
I lived in downtown L.A., sort of on the east side of Los Angeles.
And so he was always kind of on the outside looking in.
I did all of this on my own. I mean, I had no teachers. And nobody in my family or the circle of friends that I have, even to this day, knows anything about pre-Columbian.
Did you have a goal of trying to, you know, make this a career?
No, I never felt that confident. Over the years, I picked up other pieces, and I have traded, but I've never sold a piece.
In other words, he was a dealer, but only in the most basic sense of the word. But that still doesn't explain how he could present this jade as genuine, despite the fact that people have been telling him it's fake for decades. So at this point, I figure it's time to tip my hand a bit. I was able to get in touch with an expert, Donald Hale, from your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I know Donald Hale.
And so Donald said, I've seen this in the 1970s. And I'm like...
Yeah, he came to my home.
Okay.
He came to my home.
All right. So I asked about all these issues that Donald had pointed out in the iconography.
I value what he says, but, I take it with a grain of salt.
And I asked if he'd gotten opinions from any other experts.
I really haven't shown it to very many people over the years.
And with each question, Robert does get a little defensive. Not of himself, though, but really of the piece.
Because I never thought that they would understand what it was in fact, you know.
What I'm realizing is that this jade has really become an object of great personal value to him, regardless of its monetary or historical value.
I don't care whether it's real or not. I love the piece. I have it on a bookstand, and I see it every day.
And apparently that's where it stayed for decades until Robert sees that article about Jane Walsh, and he figures this could be his chance to finally know for sure what it is he has.
I have written letters to museums all over the country on various questions that I had. Not one of them ever responded.
But as we know, Jane does respond, and when she sends him those initial results, that the jade is from Guatemala and was carved with hand tools, at that point, Robert has heard all he needs to hear. And a few years later, when our show comes to Anaheim, that's the documentation he chooses to bring.
Well, at the show, I didn't have all this documentation.
Except that Bob remembers it differently.
I sent the documentation to him later.
But at the show, he would have seen something about Jane Walsh's stamp of approval, though.
No. I didn't have that. I don't believe I had that.
But yeah, he did have that, and I tell him as much.
You know, that's a good question. That aspect I don't remember.
And suddenly, Robert's memory gets a little fuzzy.
I don't know. I don't know whether I must have had something for sure, but, you know, more than that, I don't know what to say.
So that's Robert's story. John Buxton is not convinced.
No, this really is under the heading, you can't have it both ways. And what he substantiated with you is that he knew quite a number of dealers. So for us to assume that more than one person saw this jade and told him it was bad would be a pretty credible thing.
Meaning Robert must have known the piece was a fake when he brought it into our show.
This piece is bogus, and he's trying to make it real.
But then again, even John can see some gray area here.
He was very gracious to the roadshow. He didn't have to send me the extra documents, but he did.
And so even if the object itself is clearly a fake, the person who owns it and his motivations for bringing it to us, those are just not clear to me. At the end of the day, I don't think it was about the money or trying to sell this thing. I think it's about wanting so badly to believe in this object that had changed the course of his life forever.
And you know, you just gotta say, the courage of his convictions explains what was he thinking. It really does. He still believes this thing is right. In spite of John Buxton, in spite of Jane Walsh, in spite of Donald Hales, he doesn't believe it yet.
No.
He just doesn't. Yeah.
Could that conviction be so strong that our guest deliberately left out crucial information to try and make us believe it too? That we'll never know.
That's what we grapple with, because who knows? The only one who really knows and may not even know anymore is the guest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing I could say about this is it sounds like the King of Fakes got faked.
You know, of all the people... Of all the people we could have picked, if we had to pick one appraiser, it would only be Buxton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad the King of Fakes got faked.
Yeah, me too. It works.
That's it for Detours. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the story of an unexpected call from the FBI. In the meantime, you can see the jade for yourself at wgbh.org/detours. Let us know if you think it looks real to you. Detours is a production of WGBH in Boston and PRX. Our producer and sound designer is Ian Koss. Our assistant producer is Isabel Hibbard. Nina Perzuki is the managing producer of podcasts at WGBH. And Marcia Bemko is Detour's executive producer. I'm your host and senior producer, Adam Monahan. Archival audio from Secrets of the Maya Temple came to us from the University of Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology. Our theme music is Once in a Century Storm by Will Daly from the album National Throat. Thanks for listening. Have a good one.
What he needs to do is take it to a jeweler and have engraved on the back of this. This was identified as a fake at Antiques Roadshow. So that nobody ever takes it anywhere. And we get a little free advertising.
That's a good one.